You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Heumann, of course, and we're here to do our weekly podcast, Vox Stocks Screener. No, Vox Screen Stocks. I can never
get
that.
We'll get them in the
end. Yeah, my head's backward, but like the market at the moment. But do you know what I notice about this podcast we do, John? You run the screens, and I just realise how many companies out there I don't know. You know, it's amazing.
It's a big market.
I know.
Yeah, it's a big market. That's why Stock Screen is so good, because it chucks up things that you may have not heard of before.
Yeah, yeah. And this one, exactly. And this one, you're looking at companies with certain metrics hitting 52-week lows. I'm surprised not to see any of my stocks in there, because a few of them are at that level, you know. So it's been a tough market. But yes, nice to always get some refreshing ideas. And when I looked through this, again, what I'm looking at, you know, I said I've been a little bit bearish on the... on the market recently, because I keep trying to reiterate this. The cost rises we're seeing now, we won't see the effects of that from companies reporting for a long time yet, you know, because they're only just starting to come in. And so when you think about it, let's say you've got financial results or interim results. First of all, they're not released until about 3 to 6 months afterwards, and yet the big costs, like energy costs going into certain companies, you know, won't be in those results, or they will be 6 months down the line. So, you know, and I can't see energy prices coming off a bit. So what I'm looking for is companies, really, they're not energy intensive. I'm hopefully looking for, you know, recurring contracts, long-term recurring contracts. So that's what I'm screening for. But it's hard, isn't it? I mean, just looking at some of these stocks there, we got, how many? So 24 in this filter. What are the filters you could put in there, John, apart from 52 lows?
Yeah, so I've kept the market cap to between 25 and 250 million. It's a recovery play screen. Usually we'd expand it to be a bit bigger, but we're going to focus on the small cap end today, because obviously that side of the market's been hit, well, arguably a lot harder than some of the larger companies. So it's not just about companies that have hit 52-week lows that might recover. It's sort of looking at why they might recover. So we're looking for certain quality metrics in there. So we're looking at return on capital employed, which is basically a financial ratio that we use to see how efficiently a company is using its capital to generate profits.
Yeah.
And then we're also looking at something called the earnings yield. And this is basically the inverse of a PE ratio. So the higher, the better. And this is basically a company's operating profits over its enterprise value, which is debt plus market cap. And so what this is telling us basically is how much profit a company generates equivalent to its market cap. It's almost like the profit you would get if you were the real owner of the business. So those two things give us an indication of the quality of these companies. And then the final metric is net debt to EBITDA, which is the closest thing you get to cash profit. So we're looking for companies that essentially aren't over leveraged here.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I've heard of quite a few in this list of 26, from Stavestyle to Fintel, Alico, Griffin Mining, all that. Peel Hunt. In fact, Sanson's Designs on there, which we've covered before, haven't we? Virgin Wines, U Group, Gem Diamonds, Virtu, Marks Electrical on there as well. So, okay. Come on, John. What do you go for?
Well, I'm going to go for Fintel, because I've looked at this company quite recently. And it's one that jumped out at me. I had the opportunity to interview the chief exec not that long ago, and was very, very, very impressed with the clarity with which he explained this business and its strategy. And basically what it is, it's a fintech specialist that delivers solutions to the UK retail financial services industry.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
basically what that means is it's selling services to IFAs, independent financial advisors, and not necessarily independent either. You can have tied agents as well. It's got data services that it sells them and also to the end customer. There's like a rating system that it operates through a subsidiary called DeFacto that it bought a number of years ago. And then it helps the fund managers develop products as well. So it's providing them with customer insight to help asset managers, product manufacturers, essentially, which you would call them in the financial services space, make products that customers want. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really, really neat business. You know, sits in the sweet spot of its industry. You know, regardless of what's happening in the markets, you know, people need to invest, people need to save, people need to grow their pension for you know, the years down the road when hopefully you know, the world is in a bit of a nicer place. And so it's doing really nicely. It's generating cash. It's got lots and lots of headroom on its balance sheet, so it can make further acquisitions. It's been tidying up its business, you know, getting rid of stuff that it describes as non-core, and really focusing its efforts on those businesses that hit that sweet spot within that sort of that value chain that I spoke of. It's almost like a virtuous circle. Lots going into digitization. So, you know, it's really, really helping that lift, helping it lift margins. I just really like it. I think it's exactly what you want in a market like this. As you said, you know, it's not energy intensive. And you know, IFAs, regardless of whether the market is going up or down, they need this stuff. A lot of it is compliance driven, regulation driven. So yeah, there's no getting away from this stuff.
Yeah, no, I do like. I mean, I spoke to them as well a while back, and in fact, Paul, I covered them on our last sort of video chat on Friday. So if you want, you know, further insight into the, you know, what Paul's saying about them, have a look. I did like that. I wanted to go for a company I've never heard of. I went through some. I just looked at this, you know, the sectors they're in. Some are in manufacturing and flooring and all that. I'm not doing that because customers. And then I came across Tiny Build. Have you heard of Tiny Build?
I've heard a bit. I'm not massively familiar with the company. What are they doing?
No, exactly. I thought, just a name. It's like a Tiny Build. What do they do? I thought, do they build little houses? Or what's the deal there for little people? But they're a global video games publisher and developer with a catalogue of more than 70 premium titles across different genres. Tiny Build's strategy is to focus on its own intellectual property to build multi-game and multimedia franchises in partnership with developers. And they've obviously, they've got a lot of developers around the world, and I think they're based, some of it's based in Ukraine. I think that's where it took a bit of a hit, but they said most of the workers are, you know, working in Ukraine and not in a risky areas, and people who are close to risky areas, they moved out of that area. They have about 400 staff. They've published like 70 games in 15 countries, and 70% of their revenue is from their own IP, their own games. And they've got a back catalogue, so they have subscription services where people subscribe and they can access the back catalogue, which I quite like. That as a recurring thing, you know. And I thought, looking forward, you know, is gaming going to be hit as bad as other sectors of the market? And I thought, I don't know, gamers just continue gaming, don't they? They don't really care. I just see these people just, you know, sitting on their game consoles, regardless of what's happening outside in the world, they're playing their games. So, I mean, I think hopefully it'll be resilient. But just looking at the information here, they are like at 115 a share. They're at 233 million market cap. They have cash of 48 million, EV of 184 million. They generated 13.2 million from operations on the cash flow statement there. So they've got a net cash position of 48. Decent growth. This is to the year to the 31st of December, up 39%. Their sales revenue figures is four times. It's a little above what I look at, but their EV EBITDA is less than 10, it's 8. And you know, look at the growth last year, like 39% from 37 million top line to 52 million. They said they are expected to be, they're a little bit above expectations, and they're expecting to hit expectations for this year, which is 66.9 million revenue, which is another 28% growth. Going forward, then, I think, I don't know where it goes, they say about 8% for 2023. and 8% again for 2024. But they, you know, generating decent cash. Just looking at the margins here, they've got EBITDA margins of about 40%, which I quite like. And the pre-tax profits is around about 24% from last year. So I think just, you know, a decent play on the game is, and I'm just basically trying to avoid anything that has, you know, it's going to feel some headwinds in the next 6-12 months. And I think gaming may be quite resilient, and they don't rely on sort of, you know, I don't think they do any advertising and all that stuff. So, you know, as we know, advertising gets hit a little bit. So it's more a subscription service for their games, and they've got a decent pipeline. And let's look at this. So they've got strong, yeah, the company has a strong release schedule for H2, and early KPIs of these titles have been very encouraging. This is the broker. And by the way, on the broker's valuation, who are Zeus, they say shares trade at a 23% discount at Team 17 and a 30% premium to develop based on consensus EV, EBITDA 2022. So, yeah. So they're saying, apparently, what is it? They're able to deliver on earnings and make its 9x EV, EBITDA 22 multiple appear very attractive. So for gaming, you know, publishers generating decent cash, they're not that expensive, apparently, and growing nicely. And so it's just a sector, I think, it's a little bit resilient. It's like, you know, almost smoking. You know, it's gamers, hardcore gamers, don't stop gaming, you know. It's an addictive thing, isn't it? So, yeah, so I quite like it for that, you know.
I mean, it's not been without its troubles. I mean, you know, recently we saw Frontier Developments, which makes a game called Elite Dangerous, had a bit of an issue. You know, and it does. I mean, it has historically moved in sort of cycles. It's been a sort of the console cycle in particular has been pretty important. But I think that sort of changed a bit now. You know, there's so many options, so many formats, so many platforms upon which you can play. But I kind of, there's something I've just noticed looking at the numbers on this company on SharePad, which I use for my analysis, and that it's got a lot of cash on the balance sheet.
Yeah.
A lot of cash. You know, approaching sort of 50 million.
Exactly. So 48. So I was thinking that they did an acquisition. Where was it? They acquired D-Magic Games recently, and I think that's, you know, part of the deal. They do acquire, I think, developers and gaming companies, so that'll help with growth as well. Mm. So plenty of cash, and they're cash generative. So, you know,
I like to see that at the moment. I think, you know, we're in a tough market, and you know, if you've got companies that are on the cusp of, you know, they're on the cusp of break even, but you know, the cash is running out, they're burning rather than generating.
Yeah.
You know, I think in a market like this where raising is difficult, you know, you've got to be wary of that. So to see a company with a lot of cash on the balance sheet is, I would say, a huge comfort at this particular juncture of the investing cycle.
Yeah, I think the IPO'd back in March 2021, and when you think of it, that was not a good time to, you know, to IPO, because the top of the market pretty much was in a month or so later for AIM. And so they IPO'd at £2.21 or £2.20, I think it was. They went up on the hype to about £3. And then literally, they almost like within months, went down to a £2, bounced back up to £2.80. And then all of a sudden, since September, which actually was the top of AIM, the high of AIM, from September, they went from £2.80. And I don't know, 115. And so, you know, I just think cash generated, plenty of cash, gaming. Yeah. I don't know how insulated it is. It's almost like in this environment, you're looking for companies to avoid, you know, or sectors to avoid rather than. And that's the thing, you know, I was chatting with people in this my share group there. And someone said, even though my portfolio's taken a hammering over the last 18 months, I've learned more in this last 18 months than I have in the last sort of 5-10 years of investing. And I said, yeah, absolutely. You know, you do. Whenever you're in a bear market, you tend to assess risk more. In a bull market, you just look at reward because everything sort of is going with the current, is up. So you do learn a lot more. And it's like one thing we know about, you know, bear markets is they do end, and bull market is a lot more. Yeah, who knows when it ends, but you know,
it will end.
It will end, but like I said, you can afford to actually take time to research more in downturns, because share prices don't just shoot up, you know, don't just run away with it. Because, you know, I've been in bull markets where I've researched a company, they've released an update, and it's gone nuts. Like, oh my word, it's gone up like 30-40% in one day on AIM, and you think, oh, and then so all of a sudden, then you have to sit back and do nothing, or the worst thing you can do is, you know, fear of missing out, buy, and then all of a sudden it's a spike and it'll come back down a little bit. But in bear markets, you don't get those massive spikes. So it's a good time to have some cash, sit back and do some research, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Build a watch list. I mean, what you do see, as you, and it goes back to your point about managing risk, is you do see companies shoot down if they miss. RM today.
What happened there? Because I said, you know, there are three possibilities when I come, and people should pay attention to, you know, broker forecasts if they can, because, you know, that's what the market leads by. And I said, there's three things that can happen essentially. Be below expectations. In this market, they'll take a hammering, you know, from 20% plus easily. If they meet the expectations, generally, you get a little, you know, sort of pump in the morning that goes up a little, and then always they get sold into, because they're worried about the outlook. But if you see the expectations, you may, you know, do well for a few sessions. But, you know, they said, yeah, that's the trouble. It's almost like thinking ahead now and thinking which companies are likely to meet or be below and which sectors are likely to exceed. You know, that's what I'm looking at now at the moment. And,
I think what you need to be looking at very, very closely now is the outlook statement. So yeah. you'll get a lot of, as you say, you know, these results are a sort of lagging indicator of where those companies are. Mm-hmm. So I guess the focus now is on the outlook statement, and that's where I think, you know, even though companies are hitting their brokers' expectations, that the outlook is making a lot of people very nervous in a lot of cases.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, pay a lot more attention to that. I was quite interested by something you said about Tiny Build IPOing last year, because a number of companies on this recovery list did actually IPO last year, or certainly in the very recent past. You've got Victorian Plumbing, Marks Electrical, Music Magpie. There's another one, Tiny Build, that you mentioned already. I think even they did float, at the top of the market. But I think what you're seeing is, those companies that IPO'd at the right time, or you could say the wrong time, depending whether you bought it at the beginning, have all sort of sold. A lot of them have sold off quite heavily. Mm. So, you know, it's as though the baby is being chucked out with the bathwater. So I reckon some of those IPOs from 2021 that are trading at lows are worth a look, because basically I would suggest that there is a sort of school of thought sentiment that anything that came to market at that time is junk, that its founders are trying to offload, its owners are trying to offload at an opportune time when they could reap as much money as possible. I think that's something else to have a look at.
Well, that's it, isn't it? You know, the IPO market is very busy when capital is cheap, there's lots of liquidity, the market's very bullish, and then all of a sudden you think that, well, maybe it's always almost the most busy time for IPOs, almost maybe close to a top sometimes, you know. And maybe we should do a screener on that if we can somehow. IPOs performances
in
the last
12
in the last 12 months, and try and pick through some decent stocks that have been, like I said, thrown out with everything else and just sold off. You know, there are, of course, varying qualities of company that IPO, but there's bound to be some good ones in there, you know, that have just been sold off with sentiment, you know.
Let's do that next week. Next week.
Excellent stuff. Thanks for that. By the way, you can see the entire list on voxmarkets.co.uk. And if you have any suggestions for a screener, let us know. And we'll do that. And speak next week, John.
Cheers, Justin. Speak soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.